for Monday, April 11th, 2005. And members, the chair will be arriving sometime later this morning. What we're going to do is move into a public hearing on the State Board of Clinical Social Workers, and we will follow that with a hearing on the State Board of Clinical Social Workers fee bill. We will go back to the beginning of the agenda for work session when we have a quorum present to take up that work. So what I'd like to do now is open the public hearing on House Bill 5009, State Board of Clinical Social Workers, and ask folks who are here for that subject to please come forward.
Leave your desk and attend.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And if you would just identify yourselves for the record, and Ms. Matthew, do you have any opening comments before we hear from the agency?
No, Madam Chair, I don't.
Okay. Please go forward.
Madam Chair, I'm John Langenwalter, the Administrator for the State Board of Clinical Social Workers. And with me today are Susan Turley, the Vice Chair. She's a public member from Tigard. And Becky Rasmussen, a board member, a licensed clinical social worker here in Salem in private practice. And we're here on behalf of the board to present the budget. The primary mission of the board is public protection. The slides that you'll be seeing on the screen are also the slides that are in your handout that you got last week. You can certainly follow either one if you want. The board uses four primary components to meet its goal of public protection. The first is to enforce a strong code of ethics through a thorough and fair complaint resolution process. And that's why it's very helpful that Ms. Turley is here today. She is not only vice chair of the board, she's also chair of the Consumer Protection Committee on behalf of the board. The second component is the impaired professional process to monitor actions of licensees to ensure patient needs are properly met. And that's why it's very nice to have Ms. Rasmussen here today. In addition to being a board member, she's also chair of the Impaired Professionals Committee on the board. Over the years, the board has developed a stringent application process which requires 3,500 hours of supervised work in an agency setting, and this is after the completion of a master's in social work degree from an accredited institution. That plan must take at least 2 years and include 2,000 face-to-face client contact hours and at least 100 hours of supervision. The fourth component is our annual licensure renewal process of approximately 3,000 licensees to ensure continuing education and ascertain if there are any problems of impairment. And that happens every year when we send out our renewals. Looking at just the complaint process for a moment, the board is committed to processing complaints thoroughly and fairly. I'll do a brief review of the complaint statistics and process. This chart of the complaint statistics for the last five biennium and so far three-quarters of the way through this biennium, I would ask you to look specifically at the bottom two lines, the total for the fiscal years and the disciplinary actions. You'll note that the total number of complaints has decreased last year and so far this year. There is a slight discrepancy in the slide on the projector and what you have for this year. I now have 21, you had 20. Complaint came in last Thursday, and that's why the slide shows 21. You'll also note that so far we've taken three public actions this fiscal year. Looking back at 2001, we took five public actions that year, which was an anomaly. That was the highest we'd ever done. So far this fiscal year, we're three-quarters of the way through. We've taken three already. We will take our fourth tomorrow at the board meeting. We have a stipulated agreement already signed by a licensee, and I'm assuming the board will affirm that stipulation tomorrow at their meeting. So that will be a number four, and we're in process of doing a final order by default that I'm sure will occur before the end of June, so we'll all of a sudden have five public actions this fiscal year. So the number of complaints has decreased, but the severity, complexity, and the need to take public action has increased. You have in your packet, as handout in behind the first tab, the complete complaint packet that we send out when anybody contacts the board with concerns about a licensee out in the field. It involves the complaint form and the release of confidential information form, a complete copy of our rules and laws that govern licensure practice in Oregon for the board, a form called, or not a form, but a chart as you consider making a complaint. The board deals with dual relationships and sexual misconduct and all those kinds of things. But the public frequently doesn't understand what that actually means. And so we've developed this sheet that gives a brief paragraph. This is what we're talking about in terms of billing issues. This is what we're talking about in terms of that kind of complaint, to give them some handles to see whether or not their concern actually rises to the level of complaint. Also included in that handout are two new handouts that we're sending out with our packet. Those haven't been formally adopted by the board yet. They're still in process, but that gives you a good idea of what we'll probably wind up with. It's, first of all, just a verbal two-page overview. Once a complaint comes into the board office, what do we do with it? How does it get processed? And the second one is a process flow for those that like things in a more visual way. Turning now to the impaired professional process. Our rules define an impaired professional as a licensee who is unable to engage in the practice of social work with the skill and competency necessary for the protection of the public health because of substance abuse, mental illness, or incapacity. So the impaired professional program that Ms. Rasmussen chairs deals with those professionals in the field that allegedly have drug, alcohol, sexual addiction, or abuse issues, and also any mental health conditions. And yes, licensed clinical social workers sometimes have their own mental health issues they need to deal with. We get the information about possible impairment from three different sources. One, our rules require that if there's a clinical social work out there or a licensed clinical social worker who believes that one of their colleagues, a licensed colleague, is struggling with alcohol abuse, for example, or some other form of impairment, they are required by our rules to advise the board of their concern, and then we look into it. Each year on our renewal forms, we ask questions if the person has been convicted of any felony, any sexual offense, or any offense involving a controlled substance or alcohol within the last year. And then we also sometimes get calls from employers saying, you know, I have some concerns. This is why how they've been acting lately. This is what I think is going on. And then we'll look into that. Once the board has received information alleging impairment, the first thing they do is to send out a request asking the licensee to share information related to the possible impairment. The board can request chemical dependency, psychological, or psychosexual evaluation if that's appropriate in the situation. They can request inpatient or outpatient treatment as they believe is needed. And then if a person does go through either inpatient or outpatient treatment, the normal process for the impaired professional committee is to monitor diagnoses of addiction abuse for 2 years and a diagnosis of addiction dependency for 5 years after the treatment has been completed. Looking now at our agency organization, your second tab gives a brief chart of the agency organization. We are comprised of 7 board members, all appointed by the governor. 4 of them by law are licensed clinical social workers. 3 of them by law are public members. The board is assisted by 3 staff, 2.5 FTE, and there is a chart in the handout, as I mentioned. The third tab in the handout contains the performance measures that the board currently and hopes to track. Performance measures 1, 2, and 3 are the current ones on the book. Basically, number 1 asks if the board is processing complaints timely. We're requesting a minor word change there. The second one is, are licensees keeping current educationally? And once again, we've requested a minor word change. And the third one is, does the board staff provide effective customer service? That basic customer service question. We're requesting 2 new performance measures be added to our portfolio. The fourth one is the most ambitious one, and that is, do licensees use best practice? And that's one that's going to call the board to be a little bit more proactive and be engaged in licensees out in the field, not just in terms of handling complaints, but helping licensees understand what is the best practice so that hopefully the number of complaints will eventually reduce a little bit. And then the fifth one, the other new one, is whether or not the board's website is usable by public and licensee base. Are we accessible? The fourth tab is our prioritized list and 10% reduction in compliance with House Bill 3182. We filled out that form, and you'll see we are a very small agency, and to take a 10% reduction, the only way that we could do that and make the figures turn out would be to drop a half a position, go back to 2 point FTEs. That would drastically curtail the agency's ability to accomplish mission. We're certainly hopeful that you do not request or require that the board take that 10% reduction, but this is just in compliance with the budgetary process outlined in House Bill 3182. That concludes this phase of my presentation. If there are any questions over what I've shared so far, we'll be glad to answer them.
Are there any questions for Mr. Langenwalter? Langenwalter, I'm sorry. Seeing none. Ms. Flamenco? Committee, the presentation from Sam is actually inside the binder. It's in the first file. Please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. I'm working from this handout that you have in front of you, and in the interest of time, I will be brief. I will just point out the major issues in this budget, and then we'll turn it over to back to the agency to talk more about details of the budget, and I will be happy to answer any questions that you may have. The Board of Clinical Social Workers, the total budget is about $0.6 million total fund. I'm sorry. yes. And this agency is located in the Consumer and Business Services Program Area. Within this program area, it accounts for less than 0.1% of the total spending, and again, there's no general or lottery funds involved in this budget. A primary source of other funds is licensing fees. The board has only one program unit operations, and about half of spending happens in personal services, which is staffing costs for the board's three employees. And the other half, about 47%, is services and supplies. Over the years, over the last several biennia, the board's budget has been growing steadily and slowly, and the number of FTE and positions has not changed. There are several policy issues that will influence the 2005-07 budget. Just as a background, the board is regulated by a Title Act, which means that the board regulates the use of a title, licensed clinical social workers, which means that there is a significant volatility in the number of licenses because the board only regulates the professionals who choose to be licensed as a clinical social workers. Related to this volatility is the revenue shortfall that the board is dealing with, and there are two policy packages that address the lack of revenue necessary to sustain operations of the board. The board, during the next biennium, the board will implement birth-month renewal process instead of a one-time annual renewal process, and this will hopefully even out the cash flow and lower the imbalance requirement for the board. And finally, the board has been dealing with an increased complexity of public complaints that it has been receiving, and Mr. Langenwalter has already talked about that, and there's a policy package that addresses this issue. At this point, I will be happy to answer any questions that you have about this budget.
Any questions from Ms. Franco? Hearing none. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's see. Do we have any? Well, please proceed with phase two.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Devlin, members of the committee. Once again, I'm still John Langenalter, and Susan is still here, and Becky is still here. There are six policy packages that you'll consider as you consider the governor's recommendation.
Can I back up for a second? I'm going to open a hearing also on 5010 because you may be commenting on 5010 also.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Okay. Policy package 100 involves a slight fee increase for annual renewals. Policy package 101 is the necessary employee position reclassification. 102 relates to the Oxbox service charges. 103, Office of Administrative Hearings. 104, rent. And 105, to ratify a fee restoration that the previous legislature authorized. Looking at policy package 100 briefly, did I mention it was a slight fee increase? We're recommending that the annual renewal for licensed clinical social workers go from $75 a year to $90 a year. That's a $15 a year increase. And for clinical social workers associates, go from $55 to $60 a year. That's a $5 a year increase. The chart shows the historic ending balance and fees of the board for the last four, well, the preceding three biennium, this one and the projected 05-07 biennium. I would call your attention once again to the bottom line, the ending balance line. You'll notice that in 99, we had almost $325,000 ending balance, and so the 99 legislature instructed the board to take a temporary fee reduction, which the board did. You'll notice how they reduced their fees in all categories except for the late fee, and I'll explain those two figures there. If a person is late with their renewal, up to a month late getting their renewal in, they're charged an extra $25 late fee. If they're more than a month late, they're charged a $50. The board chose not to mess with that formula, but they did reduce all the other fees as the legislature had requested. In the 0103 budget, there was a policy package requesting restoration of fees. The legislature looked at the proposed ending balance and decided not to honor that request, and so we stayed with the temporarily reduced fees for two biennia, 4 years. There was a policy package for the current budget, the 0305 budget, requesting a restoration of fees, and the legislature adopted that policy package, and thus, by administrative rule, in December of 03, we restored the fees to their historic level. The budget that you have before you now to consider for 0507, once again, requests a slight fee increase just for the annual renewal. We get approximately 85% of our income from the annual renewal portion of our budget, and that's, you know, the biggest chunk. And so just by increasing that very modestly as we're requesting will give us the fees we need. You'll notice at the bottom of 0507 there are two different figures for carryover. The $95,000 is assuming that you agree with policy package 100 and allow us to take the fee increase. The $15,000 assumes that you do not, and the $15,000 would allow the board to stay in operation for about 3 weeks into the 07-09 biennium. You're aware of most of the budget drivers. I'm sure you've heard about the DOJ fee increase for this next biennium. Our budget item does not include any increased hours by AAG, but simply acknowledges the fee increase. Increase in state agency government service charges from the current biennium, 0305, to the new biennium, there's a 74% increase. And if you look back at the 0103 biennium, that's a 148% increase to the 0507. Also is figured in the normal cost of materials and supplies, the increase there, and the effects of policy packages 101 through 104. As Dr. Romenko referred to, in addition to those budget drivers, there's also some income challenges that the board and the governor had to realize as we prepare this budget for your consideration. As Dr. Romenko indicated, we are a totally other-funded agency, getting not one tax dollar at all. 97.4% of those funds come from the application and licensure renewal, and as I indicated, 85% approximately come from licensure renewal. For the preceding 4 years before this biennium, we grew an average of 94 paying people a year that were then part of our licensee base that were involved in annual renewal. Last year, we grew by 37. That is the lowest figure since the board was founded in 1979. This year, we're anticipating growing between 30 and 35, so either we'll set another new record low or be darn close to it. Simply speaking, our growth is not keeping up with the necessary budget increases. Because of Oregon's economy, there just aren't that many new jobs opening up in the mental health profession for licensed people. Now, if it is the legislature's intent this legislative session to double the DHS requested budget for mental health services in a couple of years, we'll be fine. But if that's not on your radar screen, we certainly do hope that you support Policy Package 100. Policy Package 102 refers to lockbox charges, and I need to put that in context for just a minute. When established in 1979, the board was placed with the Health Division for accounting and personnel functions. We became a standalone agency in 2001 and moved those personnel and accounting functions to DAS. The Health Division had taken all of our checks and put them in the bank and sent that information to the Treasury, but DAS is not set up to do that, and so we contracted with the bank, U.S. National Bank of Oregon, and it costs about $8,000 a year for those lockbox charges. There's a line item in the budget, and that line item has always been covered by savings in other line items. This $8,000 policy package acknowledges the historic, current, and projected reality of this lockbox charges and the reality that the budget you have before you now won't have savings in other line items that we can transfer and pay this monthly charge from. What the board chose to do as they looked at this new budget was to move $8,000 of savings from some other line items into something that supports our primary mission, which is public protection, and that's out-of-state travel. The board really wants to increase the number of board members who attend the Association of Social Work Boards Spring Continuing Education event, which is for board members. It's not for a licensed clinical social worker to go and learn more about dual diagnosis or bipolar disorders or anything like that. It's for board members to go and learn how to be a more effective board member for this particular slice of the mental health profession. Historically, the board chair and the administrator have gone to those meetings, and in fact, Mark Olden, the board chair, and I were at the meeting just last Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in Boston, and it was on best practice. And if you'll remember back to the performance measures, that's one of our new performance measures, how to increase best practice. The board very much wanted to send Ms. Turley, the chair of the Consumer Protection Committee, and Ms. Rasmussen, the chair of the Impaired Professional Committee, but as we looked at our remaining budget for this year, there was just no money to do that. We'll be right at our limitation come June 30th. We are committed to public protection, so we took some savings, historic savings from a couple other underspent line items, that $8,000, and put it into the out-of-state travel, and thus you have that lockbox service charge for $8,000 in front of you. The sixth tab is our affirmative action information, and you'll notice we're updating the board's policy and plan. What you have is a draft that the board has considered and we'll look at again tomorrow at their board meeting. Their goal is to have it refined and finalized and approved by their June meeting. The current membership of the board includes 6 whites and 1 Hispanic. The board is in the process of creating a multi-agency task force to create ways to increase the number of minority persons who gain education to become licensed. You'll remember that a person needs to have a master's in social work degree before they can even approach the board for licensure. And so we're working with Portland State University, some other state agencies, and other stakeholders to try and increase the number of minority persons that are admitted to that program at PSU, as well as the number that get through the program successfully. We're also collaborating with a couple other mental health agencies to develop grants for people who already have their bachelor's degree and would be eligible to go for their master's and maybe because of time or money haven't been able to so far. I'm trying to find some ways to help that happen because there's some good people out there in the field that have at least a bachelor's degree and maybe some master's courses and just need a little help to finish out.
Chair?
Yes. Representative Wisner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir, do other states require the master's degree to be licensed?
Chair Devlin, Representative Wisnat, yes, for the licensed clinical social worker level, they do. A lot of states have a bachelor's level certificate or registration. We do not. We just have the one license. But for any LCSW anywhere, it does take a master's level.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Please proceed.
The final tab is our birth month renewal proposal, House Bill 2177. This very committee, two sessions ago, 4 years ago, requested that DAS and the board study the agency's cash flow and ending balance requirements and see if there was a different process rather than end of year renewal, like maybe birth month, that would even out cash flow and workload. I'm glad to report that DAS and the board have completed that study, and a copy of that study is in the handout, which supported the wisdom of your suggestion. And thus, House Bill 2177 proposes that we move to a birth month renewal process. That will help us even out the cash flow, and thus we will only need 3 months of carryover balance, which is the DAS recommendation, instead of the 5 months we now need to get us to when we can earn money. And it will even out the workload and allow the staff to respond timely at all times. This bill has already passed the House on the consent calendar with no opposing votes. In talking with Senator Anderson last week, she assures me that once her committee gets done hearing all of the Senate-created bills that they need to, and they start looking at the House bills, that they will hear our bill, not first, but early on. And I would encourage the senators, as it comes to your attention, either in that committee or on the floor, to support this piece of legislation. On behalf of the State Board of Clinical Social Workers, I thank you for your time and caring for this very small but important agency, and we'll be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Yes, Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On package 102, lockbox charges, you mentioned that you've switched this over for about two biennium. Why didn't the budget in the past reflect this as a separate line item instead of just paying for it out of other savings?
Senator Devlin, Representative March, I'm not sure, to tell you the truth. I've been the administrator now for a year and a half, so this is my first time through the budget process. All I know in talking with our accountant at DAS is that even though there wasn't any funds there, you know, there was a line item, nothing there, it was just covered because of savings and some other line items, and we're very clear those savings aren't going to be available in this coming biennium.
Hopefully
we're just trying to true up the budget.
That's a good thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes, Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair, just to kind of to clarify, in another Ways and Means Committee, the Natural Resource Committee, which is hugely fee-driven, I got the impression from the chair of the discussion that the full Ways and Means was going to look not very favorably upon fee increases. So I don't know, can you give me some direction on that? Is that what you're hearing, or what's happening as far as that is concerned? What they're saying is that we're supposed to be in such a dire financial crisis that we want to send this message. So.
Yeah. Well, Senator Nelson, I have not heard any direct message from either of the co-chairs. My own personal belief is that we probably should evaluate each fee increase bill before us, and if we think it's merited or important to performing the tasks of the regulatory board that's before us, then we should approve it. If we don't believe it's necessary, then we should disapprove it. And obviously that'll be a vote of this committee. Representative Wisnett and Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize. I was testifying in another committee, Commission for Children and Families. Also had a meeting this morning about 7:30 about mental health and equity this morning. So I hope my question, I'm not repeating something that you've told us. FBI background checks for your people. Do you monitor that? And there's a proposal to increase that. So does your budget include a proposed increase in providing that service?
Okay. Please. Chair Devlin, Representative Whisnett. Our budget does not include that. Currently, the board does not require the FBI background check. That's something the board has been looking at, and we talked about that in Boston last week as part of the best practice thing. A few states do currently require that. Most states do not, but we're moving in that direction. So if we do move that direction, the next budget will include that.
All up to you, Mr. Chair, and the mayor, staff members. And we've talked about in public safety about trying to figure out who all needs this, because, like, he's licensing people that don't work for the state. The state workers, do they get FBI checks?
I would guess it would depend upon what the classification of the state worker is. I can absolutely assume, I can actually assure you that every applicant to be a state trooper gets an FBI background check, if not a lot more. I would think that that is an issue that maybe should be explored in one of the substantive committees, because we have actually had a very, let's see, I think, Representative Wisman, you've talked about this before, we've had a very ad hoc sort of process for determining which professions, which occupations have background checks and which do not. So you'll see some people come before us where they will be advocating for a fee increase to cover the cost of background checks, and others will not be doing background checks at this point. And there's no real logical basis for the distinction, or at least not one that's been identified, between which agencies do and which agencies don't. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am distressed, I guess, that a agency licensing this particular type of professional is not already doing FBI background checks. I won't bore the committee with personal stories that I'm familiar with on this, but I think that needs to proceed with all due haste. We're talking about pretty sensitive type of work that these folks do, and okay, enough of that. The one thing I have a question, though, if we could, and I don't have the information, I'm sure it's available, but can you compare the fees for the licensed clinical social workers and the licensed psychologist? Is there someone here that can do that?
Actually, one of our next agencies coming up will be going over their fees. Probably the licensed psychologists are here today, so.
okay, we will check with them when they arrive. Then, or if they don't present that to us, I'm sure, having heard that now, they'll probably be more than prepared to present it if they weren't planning to. On the fee, I certainly personally am not. I do not find it the raise that's being asked for, increase that's being asked for, to be somewhat objectionable, and it still seems, I think, rather modest fee for a profession of this type. I would be inclined to want to support that unless there's some very strong argument in a different direction, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. For the sake of the committee's discussion, this being a policy issue but not actually a budget issue, I'd ask Ms. Manthey to look at all of our licensing boards and see which require background checks, and also to see if boards would under their current statutory authority, have the ability to institute those, or whether they would need statutory authority from the legislature to do that. So that's more of a substantive issue, but I thought since this issue has come up several times, we probably should be kind of aware of, we have 14 or so licensing boards before us, we should be aware of what sort of mix we have on this issue. So, yes, Senator Nelson.
Just some things that struck me. I mean, this isn't really a big budget in the big scheme of things, but see, there were 7 board members, and maybe have some comment on why would you need 7 board members in an agency this small. The increase in the Department of Justice fees from 98 to 119, I'm understanding that may not be that may not occur, but that would be adjusted, I guess, in the budget. Then the final one, this is on page 93 in this book here, is it's talking about accommodate 2 new file cabinets is going to cost $8,000 more for rental. I guess, you know, I'm not sure that it's a small figure, but then, just some things that sort of jump out.
Well, Senator Nelson, I agree with you. Even on a 24-month basis, biennium, it seems like a rather large increase, but I guess, are you renting? I assume you're renting space through the Department of Administrative Services. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
You should get a better landlord.
You want me to respond?
Ms. Flamenco has her hand up.
Chair Devlin, I just wanted to clarify, the board is renting space from a private landlord. That facilities is involved in negotiating their lease. However, the board is not renting from DAS facilities directly.
Okay. Thanks, Ms. Flamenco, for the defense of the Department of Administrative Services. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Gordon.
Quite all right. Good morning again. I have a question about Senate Bill 786 compliance. And in your materials, can you point me to the page, the information that describes your activities under 786, which was to be a report to the legislature describing how you are diversifying the board and working to add diversity to the profession as well.
Okay. Chair Devlin, Senator Gordley, thanks for the question. And I'm not sure if this fully answers your question, but in the handout, the first page is just the overview of the affirmative action information. What we have done or are going to be doing.
Which page are you looking at now? Excuse me.
This is in the White House, and I think it's tab, the next to the last tab, right before House Bill 2177.
What was it?
It's in this handout, the next to the last tab.
It should be an affirmative action.
And basically, it talks about things, and I mentioned earlier, we're working with Portland State University and some other stakeholders to try and increase the number of minority persons that gain admittance to that program and then successfully complete it. We're looking at a grant possibility for people that might have a bachelor's degree already and be working in the field and need some additional help to get through the master's program. But we really don't have any way, until they have a master's in social work, they can't even approach the board for licensure.
Are you collecting the data under Senate Bill 786?
Of our licensee base, you mean?
Yes.
Senator Gardley, yes, we are. On a voluntary basis, and about, I want to say, two-thirds of the licensees have responded to that, and that is in our database.
All right. Thank you very much. I have found the information. I was looking in the wrong place initially. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
And very good. We will close the hearing at this point for are House Bill 5009 and House Bill 5010. I will open a hearing on Senate Bill 5507, the Board of Dentistry, which is up for work session. Ms. Manthe will give her presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, you should have somewhere buried in all the stuff we've passed out to you this morning a memo from me. It looks like this. It was next to your agenda, so it's probably at the bottom. And attached to that are the work session action report and the performance measure summary for us to go through this morning. Starting with the work session action report, again, the Board of Dentistry's budget is totally other funds. The top part of the form summarizes what's in the governor's recommended budget. It starts with their approved budget from this biennium. It adds some base adjustments, which are primarily PERS and flex benefit increases. And then there are two small essential packages that deal with inflation and other price list state government service charge type increases. The board has one policy package in the governor's recommended budget, and it's a reduction of $40,000. This was to adjust the budget for current biennium spending. Moving into the, well, I guess I just described the package 090. The next part of the work session action report will walk through the policy packages. And as I said, the board only had one. Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending approval of the reduction of $40,000. The only adjustment that LFO is making to this budget is to adjust for the PERS rate reduction. The rate went down from 15.52% to 14.63%. It's a reduction of $5,742. Leaving the recommendation, the other funds recommendation for the Board of Dentistry to be $1,716,961, 7 positions, and 7 FTEs. If there were no questions about the budget, we can move to the performance measure summary.
Seeing none, please proceed.
Right. The board presented 5 performance measures, and this form lays each one of those out for you. Again, at the far right column, column 9, is an indication of our recommendation for approval. And I have 2 recommendations to delete measure number 4, measure number 5. These are good measures, but they seem like more like internal management measures, and that's the recommendation that they keep these measures for management purposes, but they not necessarily have to be reported to you each biennium. We're also adding the 2 standard customer service measures. You'll see these in every budget before you. They're listed as number 6 and 7, excuse me. And Mr. Chair, if there were no questions on the performance measure, I could summarize my recommendation and we could have a motion.
Any questions? Please summarize your recommendations.
The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends the Board of Dentistry's 0507 budget be approved in the amount of $1,716,961, 7 positions, 7 FTE, and that Senate Bill 5507 be amended accordingly.
Is there a motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative March has moved to recommend approval to the full Ways and Means Committee Senate Bill 5507 with all of the LFO recommendations. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to thank the agency for getting information back to me, and I'm assuming to the rest of the committee.
Yes.
Responding to questions about the background and training of agency staff who performed the investigations. I will say that one of the things that is still unclear to me, and the agency can help with this, is exactly what kind of training the investigators receive that assist them in carrying out their roles. It it appears that the folks who are charged with doing the investigations have a background in dentistry. That I understood from the original hearing. But what is still unclear is what kind of training the professionals receive that's specifically focused on carrying out investigations. And I'll just continue to explore that with the agency.
Thank you very much, Senator Gordley. Okay, we have a motion on the floor to recommend approval of SB 5507 as modified by the eligible recommendations. Will you please call the roll?
Aye.
Motion carries. Representative Jensen, would you carry this to the full committee?
Sure. Okay.
And can we recommend to the co-chairs that Representative Jensen carry this on the House floor, and Senator Gordley, would you carry it on the Senate floor?
Certainly. Thank you.
That concludes our work session on SB 5507. We'll open a public hearing on 5524, the State Board of Psychologist Examiners. Will the parties please come forward?
What was this one again? Was
this is the psychologist examiner.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Martin Pitioni. I'm the executive director for the Oregon Board. To my right is Dr. Martin Wechter, practicing psychologist in Eugene, serving as our board chair. And to my left, someone you will probably recognize, Dr. Flamenco from DAS Administrative Services. I would briefly like to just go over the handouts. You're getting binders from this agency right now. You should also have previously received a PowerPoint format presentation which guides you through what I'm going to be presenting to this committee today according to the outline for the budget process. I want to also point to something that I'm particularly excited about. I also was just able to add to the binders the latest edition of the board's newsletter in the back, literally as it's going to the printer, and that's also another way for us to stay in touch with our licensees and legislators and other stakeholders. Allow me to move directly to phase one of the presentation. The Board of Psychologist Examiners agency mission is to protect the health, safety, and well-being of Oregon citizens by regulating the practice of psychology in a manner that promotes quality care. The board was established in 1973. It has five psychologists and two public members on the board appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. Our current numbers as of the end of last month are 1,183 psychologist licensees. That means a doctoral level general license to practice independently without supervision, and 41 psychologist associate licensees. That's a master's level. That's a master's level license. Many of those licensees are not independent. Some go through extra steps and further examinations before they are also independently licensed. Let me quickly review what the target groups are for the agency and the strategic environment for the board. Obviously, our primary target group is the consumers of psychological services and the general public, our licensees at both levels, the applicants for licensure at both levels, the association at the national level, which in the case of the psychologist is a U.S. and Canada-based association of the licensing boards, various state, national, and professional associations, including specialist certifications, voluntary certification providers, the schools and colleges providing psychology programs, continuing education providers, other health-related licensing boards, and state and federal agencies. The main goals for the agency are to assure that Oregonians receive professional and ethical psychological services, to provide excellent customer service, and to regulate in a manner that supports a positive climate in Oregon for the psychology profession. There are 8 performance measures that are directly tied to these goals that support the agency mission. As with most of the small boards, you will find that there are no direct links of the performance measures to the Oregon benchmarks, so the goals are all tied simply to the agency mission. Quickly, as to program areas and staff supporting these agency goals. First of all, in the consumer protection area, the first thing is that we want to assure at least minimal competency to practice. This is done through the licensing, examination, and continuing education program. And this is primarily accomplished through one staff person at the program representative one level. There is a the consumer protection component has one primary staff person assigned, a currently 1.0 FTE investigator. There is a policy package before you to retain that at that level. This is currently on a limited duration basis. There's a half FTE component that's on a limited duration basis. Oversight of these areas are provided by the executive director. I'm at 1.0 FTE. And at the executive officer level, I report to the full board. In your attachment one, there is an organizational chart that shows the board members and the reporting structure for the agency. Let me very quickly describe the program areas. In the licensing, examinations, and continuing education programs, we are primarily process applications and review them. The board is engaged in postdoctoral board-approved supervision. The board participates in a national competency exam. That's a written exam. The board also administers oral examinations. These are developed and administered by the board at a frequency of twice a year. And the year-end licensure renewal process also includes review of continuing education compliance. The key accomplishments there in 03-05 are further improvements in our oral exam and implementation in full of the various mobility options that the agency was able to get into statute as part of Senate Bill 155 in the 2003 session. Let me talk in a little bit more detail on the complaint and consumer protection area. And complaint investigations includes 2 primary areas of activity. One is the investigation of unlicensed practice, and the second one is investigations of psychologists and applicants for professional ethics violations. The board does have a practice act and a title act in statute, and has had that for some time, going back to, I believe, 1993. The board has adopted guidelines for Oregon psychologists' ethical practice, and those form also the basis for the disciplinary activity of the board. Specifically, they are the American Psychological Association Ethical Principles for Psychologists and the same organization's standards for educational and testing. In your handouts, you have some charts I would like to briefly refer to in terms of the level of activity. You will see the first chart is complaint activity by type that breaks out more specific as to the type of complaint, the level of activity that we've had, which has been consistently at about the 55 to 60 complaints a year level. The history shows a consistent increase in complaints, particularly since 1995, and again is leveling at about a roughly 60 complaints a year average. The board, under the leadership of one of our board members, Dr. Templeman of Pendleton, has just in the last few months really spent a lot of time analyzing the disciplinary information in its database to provide more information, first to the board, but also obviously to you and to other stakeholders regarding the relationship between the type of complaints and the sanction activity of the board. From that analysis of that 20-year activity of the board, we know that the most common complaint type leading to sanction is violation of multiple relationships ethics, which is 25% of all disciplinary sanctions by the board. And within that, yes.
That doesn't seem to correspond with your complaint activity by type.
It does not. And let me make, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative March, allow me to explain.
Okay, thank you.
Allow me to explain. We have, we are trying to be consistent in our reporting, and the first chart that I refer to is the historic way in which complaints categories have been reported to the legislature by the board. The activity I just referred to by Dr. Templeman is a very new process that this board has just started, and because we now have a very clear single set of guidelines, which really only have been in place as part of a major rules rewrite from last fall, Dr. Templeman has proceeded by basically trying to analyze by type of ethical violation, and that's why those things don't exactly match up. Very good question. In 2003 and 2004, six disciplinary actions were imposed by the board, three of which involved multiple relationships and sexual boundary violations. There's another one that went into the proposed disciplinary stage in early 2005 and is now moving into the contested case process. You also have a further chart that goes into more detail, this time by type of sanction, which can range from reprimand to civil penalties, probation, suspension, and revocation. And these are not necessarily mutually exclusive. You can have, you know, a civil penalty attached to so if you add up the numbers, they won't match up, because sometimes you can have, you know, more than one civil penalty or more than one type of sanction in one particular case. Allow me to briefly talk about the board's performance measures. There is a fully updated report under Attachment 2. The board reports all of its performance measures on a calendar year basis, and we tried to make sure that we actually updated all of our data from the initially it was based on 2003 data. Now you have what we have before you is based on full year 2004 data. And again, these performance measures tie into the three agency goals. I can talk about in detail what these performance measures go to now, or I can wait until phase two, depending on the pleasure of the committee and my time. I want to be sensitive to your time. So, Mr. Chair, if you want to give me some guidance on that on that front.
We will start the phase two with Ms. Flamenco's presentation, but I would like to see if there are any questions from the committee at this time. Seeing none, I'll have Ms. Flamenco do her presentation, and then we'll return to your phase two.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're complete. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, Valentina Fomenko, Budget and Management Division, Department of Administrative Services. I'm looking from this handout that you have in front of you, and again, I'm here to just give you a brief overview of the governor's recommended budget and to give you some background for the more detailed presentation that will follow. This board's program is included in the Consumer and Business Services program area, and the entire budget, again, makes a very tiny portion of the total spending within the program area, and again, there is no general or larger funds involved here. Within the governor's principles budget, this agency's budget is linked to the principle related to health and basic needs. All of the budget expenditures are covered by other fund sources, and the major source of other funds is licensing and examination fees. The board has one program unit, operations, and that contains application, examination, licensing, and all other functions of the board. About 54% of the board spending happens in personal services, and the rest is in services and supplies. Over the last several biennia, the board's budget has been growing steadily, and the number of FTE and positions has not changed. There are several policy issues, and Mr. Ficcioni already mentioned some of them. Currently, the board has an oral examination requirement for licensure, and during the next biennium, the board will be looking at implementing other options, potentially choosing between written or oral examination, and there is a policy package that accommodates this process and possibly transition. Over the last decade, the board has experienced a growth in its investigative workload, and there's a policy package addressing the situation, and Mr. Pichon has already talked about this. Also, during the next biennium, the board will implement biennial license renewal process instead of the annual license renewal that exists now, and the agency is hoping to increase efficiencies and decrease its need for temporary services. And finally, during the governor's budget process, the agency's budget was reduced by $20,000 to reflect current spending patterns, and this should not have any impact on service delivery by the agency. And with this, I will turn it over to Mr. Ficcioni, and I will be happy to answer any questions.
One item, Ms. Fomenko, in the Budget and Management Division report on page 7, listing the governor's budget, it does appear that there's a typo there. It's still keeping the FTEs at 2.5, and it appears to me that the governor accepted the board's recommendation, and I think you acknowledged that in your report. So
I apologize for this. This is a typo.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr.
Any questions for Ms. Fomenko? I'm sorry. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Moving on to phase two, very quickly, the main budget drivers for the specific budget you have before you for 05-07 is that we based this budget really not just on a view toward 05-07, but really also projecting everything through to 07-09, and shared that analysis in detail with both budget and management and the legislative fiscal office. On the licensing revenue end, this board is not proposing any fee increases. We project that we will not be in need of fee increases for the next buy-in, as well as the one after that. This is based on we're basing the budget on a conservative slow growth in our licensing revenues, and we also have one other budget driver that's related to the biennial licensure implementation, which will result in a one-time revenue bump this fall when it's when it is implemented, and that effect will cease obviously after this fall, and that is accounted for both in the four-year projection as well in the budget that you have before you. Allow me to go very very quickly over the major changes to the operations in the past, and what types of program improvements and policy packages we are suggesting for approval. The main things that really have happened in the past 10 years is the shift in the investigation function from the board to the staff. There was a half-time investigator position created in 98, and then in fall of 03, this was increased on a limited duration basis to a 1.0 FTE and triggers policy package 101 before you to retain the investigation function at that level. On the competency and efficiency front, The written competency exam used to be board administered. We have been able to increase our efficiencies by shifting that to a national written exam through a third-party provider that contracts with the U.S. and Canadian Association of Psychology Boards. We have been able to decrease barriers to business by the development and implementation of several licensure mobility options. I might want to point out that in a newsletter you just got handed in the binder in spring of 2005, one of the report items is that the board just received the last step in this process of implementing full mobility, which is a certification from that U.S. and Canadian board that we are now a full certificate of professional qualification state, which is basically a U.S. and Canada credentials bank for psychologists. The board has also focused on improvements in the oral exam. I'd like to explain that the current statutory framework of the board includes a requirement for an oral exam, including content requirements for an oral exam. The board has been successful in this session with Senate Bill 59, which has already passed both houses and has been signed by the governor, to remove those requirements from statute and allow the board to design the examination requirements by rule and allow it to also move away from the oral exam, which has been a desire of the board for some time. That also is connected to policy package number 100 before you, which that is connected to Senate Bill 59, which had a fiscal impact that is directly related to the development costs for a replacement examination as the board goes through the process of replacing the oral exam in this upcoming biennium. Other major improvements are the reintroduction of the agency newsletter in 2004 after a five-year hiatus, and a substantial increase in outreach activities by board and staff to the stakeholders in the licensing community. I may want to add as a quick background piece that this board and staff really went through a huge transition beginning with November 2002. And if you take the phase between November of 2002 and about August of 2003, 2 out of 3 staff and 6 out of 7 board members turned over. And we basically have been on a really, really wonderful and phenomenal ride since that time to, first of all, get the basics right, focus on getting the complaint investigations right. I might add that in contrast to the presentation you just had from the clinical social workers, this board has not functioned with a consumer protection committee, because the whole board, because of this turnover, functioned as the committee. We really wanted to make sure that the whole board was trained in full on the consumer protection function and not have that assigned to a committee basis at first. We may want to change that relatively soon, but that's the reason the board has not operated with a consumer protection committee structure in these past 2 years. Basically, I've already started to cover the planned program improvements. There is really a substantial need based on the complaint load and investigative loads to to have the investigation function continue at the 1.0 FTE level, which is policy package 101 before you. Again, this is this will self-fund at this biennium and will not trigger any need for fee increases for this board. The implementation of biennial licensure we talked about, and we already talked about Senate Bill 59. The other improvements really relate to the Diversity Action Plan and the implementation of Senate Bill 786 compliance, which is in attachment number. You can find it in two places. It's either attachment 5 to the PowerPoint handout, or if you're using the board binder, if you go to special reports, the first page under special reports covers the affirmative action in Senate Bill 786 compliance activities of the board. I just want to add that this is one arena where the cooperation between the three mental health licensing boards that are located in the same building with the same private landlord we talked about earlier is really coming in very helpful, because there's a lot of coordination going on between the boards in this arena.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If I could just comment here, I think that collaboration that you speak of is very timely, but also very exciting to hear about. And, Mr. Chair, I would encourage that there be developed a performance measure for all three of the licensing boards that is tied to their diversity work under Senate Bill 786, working together with staff to develop that language. Would you be willing to...
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, thank you.
It just occurs to me, having heard earlier from the clinical social workers, that collaboration should be captured in a performance measure. But again, I just want to commend the work that's going forward. It's very exciting to hear about.
Thank you, Senator Gordley, and we will look into a performance measure in that area.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I just appreciate the commendation. I also really do also have to give quite a lot of credit to the person who's going to come after me for the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors, who really has been very instrumental in encouraging that collaboration. So I believe in giving credit where credit is due. Let me quickly go over the packages before you, the specific budgetary packages before you. The cost of the state government service charges are increasing by $21,886. That's package number 030. There's a technical adjustment that, that Dr. Fomenko referred to in package 060 related to IT professional services, segregating that into a new line item, and analyst recommended adjustments from the Smart Buy initiative savings, as well as the previously mentioned $20,000 in line item reductions, which we agree on. The policy packages have been talked about in outline form. Basically, policy package number 100 is a $20,000 requested limitation increase to fund specifically the contract with an expert firm to ensure the validity of the new exam. And I just may want to add as further background information that really it was primarily in the arena of validity that the oral exam has come under a lot of criticism in the profession nationally, and we're very excited that we now have the opportunity to find a way to replace the reliance on the on the oral exam. But we do respectfully ask for your consent for this expenditure limitation on that policy package. Package number 101 that you have before you is a $39,967 limitation increase to allow for to basically convert the current limited duration half time increase in investigator position that we get to retain that in future biennia. Again, none of these packages trigger fee increases before you. very briefly on ending balances and other other factors in the strategic environment of the board. The board does process its licensees on a year-end basis and thus has higher cash flow needs of 6 to 8 months to get through the time periods where we do not have major amounts of income. The board is currently operating at a roughly 10-month level of an ending balance. The key again is that we took a 4-year view of the budget through 09, and the board made a policy decision that was agreed to by in the governor's cycle that it will be best for us to keep the licensure environment stable, which will allow the ending balance to settle back to the desired 6 to 8 month level naturally within 4 years, as opposed to decreasing licensing fees now and then having to jack them back up in the next biennium. Very briefly, impact of proposed legislation. I already talked about Senate Bill 59 on the examination package. There is a Senate bill that has received one hearing that would increase, that has a $30,000 impact on this agency that has to do with prescription privileges for psychologists. And there is also a bill that has not had a hearing that would convert this board to semi-independent status, and by nature of that type of legislation would take this agency out of the legislative budget process for future biennia. If I could very quickly go over the performance measures, there are some very good things to report. As I said, we have...
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. Could you expand on HB 2824? So is that... Do you think that'll pass? And what was your objective of...
It's not a board-sponsored... I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnant. This is not a board-sponsored piece of legislation. The governor's office went through a review process relative to agencies requesting semi-independent status. And even though the board did have a governor's sponsored bill in the 03 session for semi-independence, there was a review in the 03-05 interim in the governor's office that concluded that there would not be any governor-sponsored agency requests for semi-independence bills. So this is not a board initiative. This is a initiative by a legislator to carry on something that was started in 03, but the board is not in a position to support that legislation.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, for my information, then what is a semi-independent status? What does that mean?
Ms. Manthey, maybe you should fill in here, but we've created about 10, or we've moved about 10 different boards from the status that the psychologist examiners are in to semi-independent status. It means that they are off budget, basically. They're still subject to legislative authority in terms of statutory authority to some degree. Maybe Ms. Manfred might want to fill in.
Unfortunately, I could get the background information for you, Representative. I don't have it off the top of my head.
Mr. Chair, follow up?
Yes.
If they're in a semi-independent status, does that mean their staff are still PERS members?
Yes, and I would believe in most cases. This is, Representative Wisnant, this has been somewhat of a controversial issue. Well, I think both Representative Jensen and I came in when they first started doing this, and they didn't do too many of them, and then they tried an additional number. I can't really comment on that, whether it's worked out well or not so well. We've had other boards that have sought this status. So, but obviously the governor is not supporting the status of making them a semi-independent board or a semi-independent agency.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Just for Representative Wisnant's knowledge, even if you're not semi-independent, even if you're independent, if you're a safe corporation or OHSU, you're still under PERS.
I'll look forward to that information. Thank you.
Please,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, very quickly, in the performance measure report that you have before you based on the calendar year 2004 information, the board does have quite a number of performance measures, and based on the transition that I mentioned earlier from November 02 to July of 03, you will probably not be surprised that the 03 indicators were down given that type of transition, and we're showing significant improvements since then in 04. Specifically, from calendar year 03 to 04, the number of performance measures at target doubled from 2 to 4, and the number of performance measures not at target fell from 3 to 2. There are some that are still more future-oriented where we don't have data yet because we are not starting to, we don't have targets until starting in 05. Specifically, the performance arenas of customer service and a positive regulatory climate have seen major improvements. The stakeholder outreach activities have seen major increases and far exceeded initial targets. And the agency has received numerous feedback from licensees as to the improvements in communication and resolution of occasionally difficult issues, including with the oral exam. Let me very quickly just point out maybe the key performance measure rather than going, unless you want me to go over them in detail, let me point to a key measure that I think really captures, if you go to performance measure number 4, this is one that you, similar types of measures come before you from many of the health-related licensing boards, which is a measure that's trying to get into how quickly you try to resolve consumer complaint investigations. And there, of course, in 03, as I mentioned, we did not do well and fell back down from a 60% level in 02 to a 48% level with the introduction of the of a full-time investigator and a new staff and board. We went back up to a 68% level in 2004, and we think if we can keep this going that we can get with further improvements to an 80% level and have a modification request to that effect. But I think that measure really is probably the critical one to look at, particularly in context of policy package 101. And I think maybe what I'd rather do in the interest of time is turn it over to questions from the committee on specific performance measures. I'd be happy to discuss any of them.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Would you walk us through performance measure 2, which goes to screening for competency in the profession? This is the measure focused on the examination.
Yes, performance measure 2 rates the percent of examiners and examinees who rate the oral exam as good or excellent as an effective screen for competent and ethical professionals. And basically what we do is we immediately after the oral exam is performed, which happens twice a year, all the examiners that participate, which is usually roughly a group of about, you know, depending on the size of people, about 7 to 10 per exam, and then also the examinees, which range, depending on the group, roughly from, you know, 30 to 40 per examination that goes through, receive a survey assessing what their experience was with the oral exam. Now, you see that the data there was at the 70% level in 02 and dropped to a 57% level in 03. You know, it's difficult to figure out exactly what that the reasons for that. I mean, the part of it is simply that the national environment of the oral exam has become a lot more controversial, and the dissatisfaction is up. So it's always a combination between general dissatisfaction and what is the board specifically doing. Now, the board has focused quite a bit on improving its oral exam, and I think that is one of the reasons why the rates are starting to go back up. But the bottom line remains is that the board is cognizant of the underlying issues, particularly the validity concerns relative to the oral exam, which is precisely why we asked the legislature to remove that requirement from statute, and we have now succeeded in that effort.
Any any additional questions?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
Your board makeup, do you have requirement that you try to have representation from around the state? It seems pretty heavily represented in the Portland area.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnant, there is no statutory requirement. The board appointments are, you know, basically under the control of the governor's office. I do believe that they try to achieve a regionally diverse set of representation, and I do think that that is a consideration that goes into the process. The board has only indirect influence on that on that level, because the board can try to influence at the level of recruitment and recommendation, but ultimately the decision is up to the governor's office.
Senator
Walker.
Thank you. I'd like to respond to Representative Wisnant. You're asking all these good questions today. Not that you don't every day, but in response to that, I can tell you that I have sponsored a bill in the Senate this session that revises the executive appointment process. Believe that bill will move forward, and one of the discussions was the fact that there is no statutory requirement for geographic representation, and that is very likely to become part of the bill, but it is being discussed.
Thank you.
So it was a very good question.
And just for the record, although the governor actually recommends or brings forward those parties he wants appointed to the board, it's ultimately the Senate that decides whether to confirm or not confirm the governor's appointments.
And yes, Mr. Chair, and that's why we have a bill this session to make us a co-equal branch of government that we are on that process.
Anything additional? And we probably need to move on to the next mm-hmm. agency.
Thank you very much.
I will close the hearing on SB 5524. Open a hearing on Health Bill 5017, the Oregon Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists, Ms. Cooley and Ms. Tomato. What's he supposed to do? Can we hold on for a moment? Did the board president want to make any statement from the previous? And I will reopen the hearing if he does.
Yes.
Oh.
Dr. Lasker.
Did the board president for the Board of Psychologist Examiners want to make a statement? Okay, thank you. Please proceed.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, my name is Julia Cooley. I'm the administrator for the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. Here today on House Bill 5017, want to begin with phase one and do it rather quickly because phase two, I'd like an opportunity. I'm coming in today with a proposal for adjustments to the governor's recommended budget. Characterize this biennium as one of growth in the licensing and compliance workload for this small agency, one in terms of trying to estimate and project the agency's needs, and that brought us to the emergency board three times. The mission of the Oregon Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists is to protect the health and well-being of Oregon citizens by setting a strong ethical standard of practice through our licensing and regulation of counselors and marriage and family therapists. The board is an entirely other-funded agency. It was established in 1990. It is a Title Act. It restricts the use of two particular licensing titles, licensed professional counselor and a licensed marriage and family therapist, to individuals who have obtained this licensure from the board. The board is responsible for the licensure and regulation of those two licenses, LPC, LMFT, and postgraduate interns register for the purpose of obtaining either license who are under a minimum of a two-year supervised experience postgraduate. The law created a seven-member citizen board, appointed by the governor, The board is comprised of three licensed professional counselors, two marriage and family therapists, one representative from one of Oregon's 10 board-approved programs, and a public member. We currently have one African-American member, three males, and four females. The licenses cover the application of theories and techniques to assist individuals, families, and groups to solve mental health problems or to facilitate change. The primary differences between the licenses involve a specific training and experience in the delivery of family systems theories and techniques which are required for the licensed marriage and family therapist. The board is responsible for licensing of almost 1,600 actively practicing counselors and therapists. This number has grown by about 25% since 1998, when we had 1,293, with steady growth expected in the future. The board registers over 400 postgraduate interns, and I know intern is kind of a not be the best of terms in this situation, but these are individuals who have completed a master's or a doctoral program. They are working in a practice site. They're employed, and they're also being supervised by licensed, experienced professionals for a minimum of 2 years while they're gaining experience as a clinician. We just completed our renewal. We're actually in the grace period where we have late fees, but we offered 1,589 licenses, and as of Friday, we had 1,531 who had renewed. So we have less than 5% right now individuals who are not renewing, and we anticipate that in the next month, another 20 will probably renew with late fees. In addition to that, April 2nd, the day after renewal ends, we offered 62 licenses to individuals. So in the next 3 weeks, we anticipate growing by another 62 licensees. As I said before, the agency is self-supporting with licensing fees. The current $477,947 other funds budget includes two equivalent FTE positions, one the administrator, myself, another an office specialist position shared by two individuals. In terms of the program summary, we have a licensing function, and I do want to talk a little bit about the background checks, because that's something that's part of this board just completed a strategic planning meeting about 8 months ago. We'll go into another one in June. And we're looking at portability in this profession. We have a significant number of individuals who will come across the borders, depending on probably the economy and other kinds of circumstances, to be licensed in Oregon. And we have Oregonians doing the same thing. And so we want to ensure that they have the ability to gain employment and practice without putting up barriers that would impede that. excuse me. With regard to, we have been processing an average of 500 applicants a biennium, and we anticipate about the same number. In so doing, we'd say that over 50% of the individuals are coming from one of Oregon's 10 board-approved programs for either counselors or therapists. When we are reviewing an application, we will go out to a national database, and the acronym is HIPTA, and I'm blanking on the I, but I've got the others. So it's the health, I want to say insurance, but I think that's wrong, protection database. This is a database that 47 of the 50 states' licensing boards participate in. And so we do a check there and to see if anyone has been reported to that database. We have begun running, and this is through the Department of Justice, and I don't know what it stands for. It's OGIN, and you maybe have heard of this before, but we will run checks through this database, but it will only identify those people within Oregon. So we also are very interested in having the ability for background checks in this profession as well. It is common is probably not the right word, but people do shop around for states sometimes when their license has been revoked in another state. And I believe that the boards in the United States boards and commissions are really dedicated to making sure that we've updated the national database and taken all the precautions necessary to make sure that not only people in Oregon, but people in the United States aren't harmed.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Wong.
Thank you. Ms. Cooley, on that note, background checks are all great and important and everything, and I believe it's called Oregon Judicial Information Network. Is
Thank
OGIN.
You.
I'm
Thank
pretty
you.
Sure. But my point that I want to stress is your group of licensees are under the mandatory reporters for child abuse, sex abuse, elder abuse, all of those things.
That's correct.
And Mr. Chair, could I follow up?
Yes.
Do you have training and continuing education requirements in how to be a mandatory reporter?
We do not. That would be excellent.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
This is a problem I'm finding across the board. I have a bill this session that has been discussing that, and everyone's freaked out about being required to be a mandatory reporter, wondering how we would pay for that and all of that. But I think this is a very serious task that you are required to comply under the law with. Mm-hmm. And if you are not training your therapists and your counselors in this issue, how are they going to know what their duties and responsibilities are under the law?
Yes, I know that there is some training in the graduate schools, but your point is well taken. One of the coming out of the strategic planning meeting of the board is to sponsor continuing education, not for profit, but to pick up areas that maybe aren't part of the private sector offerings. And mandatory reporting is definitely one of those areas. And we supply brochures, we have materials, but that doesn't really get after the particular training that I think you're talking about.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I am. And don't feel bad, Ms. Cooley. This legislative branch doesn't get mandatory reporter training either, and we are mandatory reporters. Something I'm trying to change here, but I just want you to know how important it is to Oregonians that we have people trained in doing this job that we've determined as a legislature to be critical.
Yes, and I know that at the juncture at which you're trying to make that determination as a professional, it can be very difficult to know exactly what to do and who to turn to, even though we have hotlines and different kinds of information. Yeah. And I know Senator Gordley already suggested that we have a performance measure, and maybe this would be another one that would aid all of us to have something very specific, because I think that I probably share this with other mandatory reporters that are licensed in other boards and commissions, and I know it's very, very important, and we all take it quite seriously.
Thank you, and I appreciate that suggestion.
Thank you, Senator Walker. I concur with your concern. Ms. Cooley, I want you to be at ease before the committee. But just to remind you, normal protocol is when you address the committee is to address the chair and then to address the member of the committee. But that's I want you to be at ease. I'm just trying to, sooner or later, somebody's going to send me a note saying that I'm not reminding you that that's the proper protocol. So
I want you to know that, you know, about 5:30 this morning, I even practiced Senator Devlin and members of the committee. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
thank you. It's a very friendly reminder.
Please proceed.
So we are performing some type of background check, but this could be strengthened, and we would like that. We would like to be able to be either a part of legislation that does that or to bring something forward in the next session. Excuse me. With regard to consumer protection, and I'll be talking about this part of the board a little bit later, but we've seen a shift in the way that the board is operating this part of its function. With increased licensee base, we've had increased revenues. The ability to engage the services of investigator and use Attorney General legal fees more often. So we're seeing a shift from the board and administrator performing investigations to that of a professional investigator, especially for complex, more high-profile cases. And we're also seeing a shift to using those services of the Attorney General's office more frequently to ensure that the board is protected, that licensees are protected, and the public is protected. excuse me. We averaged about 40 consumer complaints in the last biennium each year. We have the Attorney General now participating in the board's executive session meetings. We didn't always have that opportunity. They assist in the resolution of complaints. They help to determine when contested cases are required. The board members, administrator, contract investigator review complaints, conduct investigations, prepare reports, and work with the Attorney General's office to see if a stipulated agreement can be reached. If it's not possible, the objecting licensee is provided with a contested case hearing before a hearing officer and works diligently to keep the board's investigative and adjudicative roles separate to provide all parties with a fair and impartial administrative hearing. The board monitors probations, supervision, required counseling, required continued education, and civil penalty payments. And the board also audits continuing education, does 10% audit on continuing education reports for compliance. So, consumer protection, this year we have, in 2005, two licenses have been surrendered in lieu of discipline. Although in lieu of discipline, this still goes on the national database, and we are anticipating in the next 3 or 4 weeks another two licenses to be surrendered in lieu of discipline. This is a excuse me, a less expensive way for the board to proceed and also provides public protection because those things that are listed in a final order as the allegations are a part of the public record. The board has administrative functions, and I don't think I need to go into those functions, but they do include the contracting for investigative services, and as I will get to a little bit later, contracting for hosting fees for our new data management system. Target groups of the board really are the public, the consumer of mental health services, communities of diversity, the universities, and other state and federal agencies, along with kind of a host of other other types of entities that we come in contact with. In terms of the performance measures, it appeared to me that maybe I should just move to the new measures and take you through the modifications and additions for the sake of time.
Yes, please proceed.
Okay.
Thank you.
the 0507 biennium, we are proposing 8 performance measures. These have been reviewed and approved. We have 5 modifications and 2 additions. Really, the modifications are fine-tuning or looking for ways to measure that might be more useful for the board as it's planning and looking at its performance. So we look at the number of audited licensees who complete and document continuing education. Instead of doing that, we're going to look at the percent of continuing education audits completed within 60 days of license renewal. So we're going to look at a staff performance there. We looked previously at the average number of days to complete an investigation from complaint to board presentation. And we're changing that to a percent of complaints presented to the board within 90 days of receipt of complaint. And this is a better measurement in terms of there are a number of complaints that can receive an investigation and have a recommendation within 90 days. But there are also other kinds of complaints where you could make a presentation to the board, but it could take a year or two for the case to actually settle. We are adding a percent of disciplinary final actions reported to the national database, and that's the database I referred to earlier. We're modifying the percent of respondents who give a positive rating on our website survey to the percent of respondents who rate website content positively. This is in accordance with DAS. We're adding a percent of respondents who rate staff contacts positively. Again, this is with concert with DAS. Percent of participants who rate the graduate school intern presentations good to excellent and modified to percent of the graduate students who see it clear and as clear and helpful. This is a really a large part of our outreach is to go to the graduate schools and talk to the soon-to-be graduates, review code of ethics, licensure laws in Oregon. The 7th is the percent of stakeholders involved in the annual rules review, board meetings, and peer advisory committees. Look at the and we'll change that to the percent of stakeholders involved in periodic review, board meetings, and peer advisory committees. And this is something that the board is very serious about because of other kinds of budget and workload issues. We're hoping that kind of those barriers are going to be removed and this summer to start in full speed. And also one of these advisory groups will be with the 2 other mental health regulatory boards. And finally, the number of website form downloads. We really didn't need that. We're measuring the number of visits to the website, and when we do that, it actually gives us all of the numbers, so it was redundant. So I want to conclude at this point, phase one, and answer any questions if you have any.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, Valentina Fomenko, Budget Management Division at the Department of Administrative Services. Again, I have a handout for you which looks a little bit similar to other handouts you have. This is, and again, I'll be brief and I will provide some background for this budget, but leave the more detailed discussion to Ms. Cooley. This board is located in the Consumer and Business Services program area, and within this program area it's a very, very small program. And again, the program is funded by other funds. and there's no general lottery funds involved here. Within the governor's principles budget, the budget is included in the principle related to health and basic needs. The page 4 of your handout shows that, as I said, there's only other funds involved here, and they primarily come from licensing fees. There is only one program unit within this agency, operations, and it's responsible for all application, consumer protection, and other issues. The majority of the agency's spending happens in personal services, and the rest is in services and supplies. And page 7 of the handout shows that over the last several biennia, the budget has been growing, the number of FTE has not changed, and I want to point out that there is no request for increase in FTE or positions in the governor's recommended budget. And there are several really important policy issues around this budget. Let me start off with the first month license renewal process. The agency has submitted substantive legislation that would allow it to establish a renewal process by rule, and with the idea that the transition to birthmark renewal process would even out cash flow and workload for the agency. During the 03-05 biennium, the agency has implemented new licensing database. Actually, this process is still going on right now. The board is in transition to a new licensing database, and hopefully this process will conclude until the beginning of the next biennium. The agency has been experiencing a significant growth in its licensing and compliance workload, as well as its investigative workload. And during the current biennium, the agency had significant limitation issues. It appeared 3 times before the emergency board and had been granted a total limitation exceeding $100,000. Some of those expenses were one-time expenses, but a part of those requests reflect the board's current needs, ongoing needs, and the board will be proposing adjustments to the governor's recommended budget based on the new information and on the results of the January emergency board of 2005. I will turn it over to Ms. Cooley here to talk more about these adjustments.
Okay. Excuse me. I want to talk about just a couple of environmental factors that are impacting the mental health community. Counselor and therapist license portability, again, is a very, very important issue for the practice. Also, we're seeing an increase in what we refer to as cyber counseling. This is a practice of professional counseling and information delivery that occurs when a client and counselor are in separate or remote locations and utilize electronic means to communicate over the internet. This is similar in some of its issues to telemedicine. The issues of licensure and jurisdiction arise. So there are a lot of different entities looking at these issues right now. There's a National Board of Certified Counselors that's put together a code of ethics and protocol monitoring this issue for the moment, and the board has adopted those same that same code of ethics, if you will, and protocol. But this is something that I think all mental health regulatory bodies are going to be wrestling with nationally in the years to come. There are also issues in Oregon of the lack of qualified supervisors and continuing education offerings in our rural communities. And the board is, in June, in its strategic planning, looking at ways or looking at this issue of distance learning and the kinds of opportunities and provisions that should be in place for individuals in our rural communities so that we are not setting up barriers to licensure when services are needed. Major issues in the last 10 years. We've reinstigated strategic planning, and it's been very helpful. Licensing fees were increased in 2001. We changed some of the rules around reciprocity, which we hadn't licensed anyone by reciprocity. Once we took a look at what some of the other leading states are doing, revised our rules by eliminating some rather artificial barriers. We're now licensing about 90% of those that apply by reciprocity, and that's in line with national averages. We're looking at birth month license renewal as a way to even the workload and even the revenue. Increased our use of technology. This has been an incredible boon to the board. The website alone, we have downloadable forms, instructions. Our mailing costs have been reduced. We just went through a renewal and used the website extensively in terms of forms and information and updates. So we're really benefiting from that. And we've increased our phone conferencing for special meetings of the board and also times when different constituents want to appear before the board but maybe are prevented from doing so. In terms of budgetary issues, the board is experiencing limitation issues and did in the 2003-2005 biennium. Due to a sharp increase in its licensee base, the number and complexity of consumer complaint investigations, increased Attorney General involvement, and replacement of its licensing database. And the goal of this agency is to establish a realistic base funding for the agency's legal, investigative, and technology services. this biennium, the board faced the possibility of three contested cases. At this point, we are not going to contested case hearing. However, the costs are still very high. For one of these cases, just getting to the point of settlement cost $26,000. So where the agency also is budgeting two contested case hearings for the biennium. the policy packages, central packages in 022 is a phase-out one-time cost of $44,000 or $45,000. These are the monies that were approved by the emergency board on April 4th, 2004, and they included investigative, temporary, and attorney general fees. In policy package 030, the cost of central government service charges and other services increased to $42,000. These are budget adjustments for inflation, for goods and services inflation of 2.4% increase, increase of $33,650 for state government service charges, $6,000 for the 16% inflation of attorney general fees, and $787 for facilities rent inflation. Technical adjustments, $1,564. This is shifting that amount from expendable properties to IT professional services. And this is a housekeeping or a way to track the IT information separately at this point in all of our budgets. And an analyst adjustment of $756, which is the expected savings that the agency will realize using the state smart buy system. Excuse me. In terms of the policy packages, the board is requesting.
Ms. Cooley, I'm going to stop you just for a minute. Colleagues, the chair would like to complete phase two of this budget this morning. And for those who can remain so that we can do that, please do so. And Ms. Cooley, it looks like you're able to wrap up in about 5 minutes.
Yes.
Thank you.
The agency is requesting a position reclassification of its office specialist position to an administrative specialist position. This was started in 2002, asking for a desk audit, which was completed in 2003 by the Human Resource Department. It was brought before the last legislative session, and all position reclassifications were denied. So we're seeking this position reclassification for the one FTE position in the agency, and I have a handout to that. Post-January 2005 emergency board, I'm calling these requests for adjustment to the governor's recommended budget. Adjustment package one has to do with the compliance part of the agency. Excuse me. For legal and investigative services, an additional $30,732. And I have a handout itemizing this request and the calculation that we used to that I used to get to this point. And this would be in addition to the governor's recommended budget, would bring the total governor's recommended budget with the adjustment to $74,240. It applied the 16% inflation across the board to these additional funds. Investigative fees, an increase of $21,363. This would make a total in the governor's recommended budget as adjusted of $39,870 for the investigative services that the board contracts with a private investigator for $35 an hour. This would give the board about 40 hours of investigative services per month. So a modest amount of investigative services. Adjustment package two has to deal with the data management licensing and compliance system that the board is currently has awarded to a contractor and will be converting to before June 30th, 2005. We do not own this software and will be in a position to pay for the hosting and maintenance, which is about $900 a month or $21,600 per biennium. Also ask for an additional $3,000 for technical assistance by the vendor and an additional $1,500 for technical support of the board's current computer system for any kinds of problems that might be encountered or new programming that might be necessary. The board also has a piece of legislation for birth month renewal, House Bill 2201. And again, I have an attachment that shows the projected revenue by month. And this would allow the board, it would give it the option to implement a birth month renewal. This could happen annually or biannually. This could be implemented in 2006 or 2007. The legislation itself is not does not mandate the year. And this is something that mimics what we're already doing in our intern registration, where they're renewed by when they were registered. We believe that this will be even out the workload of the board. It will provide better customer service because the numbers aren't going to be as great. And, of course, it will even out the revenue flow during the biennium. And I have much more information about those policy packages. Ending balance is projected, to be, would allow 11 months ending cash balance, $247,714. And that would be adequate revenue to run the board for 11 months. And I don't know if you want me to go into the 10% reduction options.
I'm going to suggest that the further discussion hold until we get to work session. If you can pass that on to the chair, Ms. Hanke. Are there any questions or comments for the record?
Just a quick one.
Senator Nelson.
We had two of the three agencies that we just heard in some manner, shape, or form ask for some sort of increase in monies. And you know, for this committee to start thinking about that, we have monies available. I mean, these are other funds, but if we get in this habit of raising money, at some point we're going to have to make some hard decisions on general funds where people coming in with worthy programs we probably should be funding. But, just the system has structurally broken it. We're going to have to make a hard decision here. I appreciate the hard work these folks all do with the other agencies. But at some point or another, we're going to have to make some hard decisions. And for us to get in the habit of saying, okay, that's all right for this case, but not the next case, I think that could cause us some problems down the line.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Also, just for the record, I'd like to thank you, Ms. Cooley, for your support of Senator Winters, Senator Carter, and myself in your attendance and, again, your support of the African-American Women's Mental Health Symposium back in August. It was great to see you there and to know that we have the support of your agency. And again, thank you for being here today. And members, we are adjourned.
Thank you.